All right, so let me ask you something, Sean. Have you ever heard of James Bond Jr.?
No.
It was originally used in a, that term was originally used in a spin-off novel in 1965 that was by an anonymous author or a pseudonym that nobody ever figured out who wrote it. And then in 1991, it was a cartoon that was in syndication, kind of like a Nickelodeon style cartoon. And I had never heard of it, but I watched the first episode today on one of those streaming sites, and it's real bad. Yeah. It's really bad. But this is not a lost childhood podcast. Welcome to Season 6, Episode 21 of Cinema Chop Shop. This is a movie podcast that concedes that remakes are going to happen, even in quarantine. So why shouldn't movie buffs, like us, decide who is recast in those iconic roles? My name is...
Las Travegas Hillbillies.
Okay, I like it. And I will be your host. And I'm joined remotely by my co-host and co-producer... Wardrobe Malfunction, a.k.a. Too Hot to Shondle. Regular guest Chelsea could not be here today, but I know she's going to listen. So her nicknames would have been Chell on Frisco Bay, a.k.a. Chell Single Room Furnished.
Nice.
They're not as good as yours, so I'm kind of glad that she's not actually here. further description of the show, the tagline says, watch, chop, retrofit, because essentially that's what we do here. We watch older movies, sometimes they're classic films with iconic actors, and then we retrofit them by tweaking the design with new parts. Quick disclaimer, we're not actually in favor of remakes and reboots and sequels. This is more of an exercise in satire and irony. We try to be funny.
And sometimes we succeed.
All right. So that will bring us in to our first segment, which is going to be movie news, right?
Yes.
All right. Oh, no, I forgot. I have to ask you a question.
Oh, go ahead.
Can you point out a good example of a bad or unnecessary remake?
Absolutely.
What do you got?
Gus Van Sant's Psycho.
You son of a bitch. I have the exact same thing written down in my notes.
Well, then it must be true.
Gus Van Sant's 1998 nearly shot-for-shot remake, except for that one part, of Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho from 1960, is by far inferior to the original. So there were two major points where they went off on a tangent in the remake. One was having Vince Vaughn have a full-on masturbation scene. And then there was also the scene where... Who is the blonde actress?
Oh, shit. The original or the new one?
The new one.
Jeez, I don't remember.
She's skinny. She's got short hair. She's blonde. Anyway, there's a scene in the shower scene. You can full on see her butthole.
Oh, well, that's always a good thing. She could have been in Cats.
Nice. we're not even getting into that. All right. So movie news. We're going to have to go through this quickly because there are a lot of RIPs. First, Hilary Heath, who was an actress in Witchfinder General, has died of COVID-19 complications at the age of 74. Danny Goldman, the voice of Brainy Smurf, died of fairly natural causes. He was 80 and he had had a couple of previous strokes, right?
Right.
And he died in hospice at the age of 80. And then longtime Disney animator Anne Sullivan dies of coronavirus.
Yep.
And Goody's star...
Tim Brooke Taylor from Willy Wonka.
He's the one who shows you the super complex computer, right?
Yeah, that tells him that wouldn't be fair.
And apparently he was on a British TV show called Goodies.
There you go. Yep.
And then Sadly, Brian Dennehy, we have to pay our respects to Tony Award-winning actor Brian Dennehy, has died at the age of 81.
Yeah, I was really sad to hear that. What a great actor. You know, it's not a great movie, but Tommy Boy, he was such a great casting as Chris Farley's father.
Yes, who was in a relationship with Bo Derek.
Of course.
She's a 10. All right, so on the brighter side, of course, rest in peace and rest in power to all of the people that we just mentioned. But on a brighter note, with production shut down, a prop maker is pivoting to making face shields for hospitals. And you were the one who brought this story to my attention.
Yeah, it's really cool. IndieWire put that out. And, you know, it should also be noted, and it is mentioned further in the episode, that the Costumers Guild as well, they're making face masks.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty neat to see these guys who are kind of out of work pitching in to use their skills for the greater good.
His name's Robert West, and he's leading a team of people who have made and distributed over 2,700 face shields to Los Angeles area hospitals. And it was kind of funny because they were costume makers, and I know Allie will appreciate this, but it took them about 4 days to get them to not make the plague masks.
Yeah.
They're like, no, it's inappropriate. And then also on a funny note, Mark Hamill, Luke Skywalker himself, has been recording every Donald Trump coronavirus briefing in order to delete them without watching. Just, I guess, for a little personal victory.
Yeah, I guess he did that just to entertain himself, maybe.
Yeah, it's fun to delete. Then we've got, speaking of deleting or covering things up, Disney Plus has used some terrible CGI to redux? No.
I guess they were sanitizing Splash for the all audiences.
Uh-huh. Retro, is it retroactive? There's a word for it in...
Retrofitting it?
Oh, yeah. They're retrofitting her butt. So anyway, they used horrible CGI to cover up her butt with like an extra extension of hair that just looks like there's back hair growing out of her lower back.
Yeah, it looks like a really stiff loincloth made of hair.
And speaking of Disney Plus, they have made another misstep, we believe, in setting another live-action remake of an animated film with Robin Hood. And I was pointing out earlier that it's a remake of an animated film that has also been live-action way too many times.
Yeah.
There are countless remakes of the live-action Robin Hood. So that will bring us to the end of movie news for this week, right?
I think so, unless somebody dies in the next 5 minutes.
And Chelsea tells us about it.
Yeah.
So speaking of somebody calling on the phone, I think it's time for the Department of Corrections Department with Chief Corrections Officer Dana.
What's up, Doc? The 2009 version of Fame did have a theatrical release. It had moderate box office success, but has a 24% rating on Rotten Tomatoes. You know, I'd say being married to Danny DeVito is a small feat. With small feet. Get it? Props to Sean for choosing Brendan Gleeson as one of his recasts. He's a great actor and father to Donald Gleeson, who was Thomas McGregor in Peter Rabbit. Time to hop back to work. See you next time.
All right. And thank you, Dana, for that. We do appreciate it in these troubling times. And I was hoping that you wouldn't have the time or notice one of my major mistakes from last episode, so I could point it out myself. And that is that Beatrix Potter did not create Peter Cottontail. She created Peter Rabbit. And the other character that she created, who was Peter Rabbit's cousin, was Benjamin Bunny. And so it was a curious case of confusion on my part. And that will close the doors on the Department of Corrections Department, which brings us to the theme of the episode. In celebration, in honor of her what would have been her 87th birth date on April 19th, which is when this episode will go kerplunk. We're talking about Jane Mansfield movies. And how did you feel about this originally when I put it on the calendar?
You know, originally I went into it not very excited because my exposure to Jane Mansfield was strictly the media portrayal of her.
Right.
And just kind of like a passing knowledge of some of her more blonde bimbo type roles that were directly in competition with Marilyn Monroe.
Right.
As we dug deeper and watched more of her films, I began to see this really intelligent person because, as you mentioned last week, she was highly intelligent. But yeah, she's super smart. And there are certain roles where she was not pressured by the studios to do her Marilyn Monroe impression.
Right.
And she's practically an entire octave lower in her speaking voice. And you can really see who the real Jane Mansfield is. So I have a greater appreciation of her because of this.
All right, so I'm going to get into some bio info, and I'm going to try to keep it fairly brief. But there is a lot to unload about her. So she was born Vera Jane Palmer on April 19th, 1933. She was an American film, theater, and television actress. She was also a nightclub entertainer and singer, and one of the early Playboy playmates. She was a major Hollywood sex symbol during the 1950s and early 60s. Mansfield's film career was short-lived, but she had several box office successes and won a Theater World Award and Golden Globe. She became the first major American actress in Hollywood film to have a nude scene in Promises, Promises from 1963. Any thoughts?
Well, I would like to correct you. She had two Golden Globes.
Oh, excellent. Oh, no, I get it. she was also known for her well-publicized personal life and publicity stunts, such as wardrobe malfunctions. She's basically the grandmother of wardrobe malfunctions.
Yeah, yeah.
In fact, there's a famous photograph of Sophia Loren giving her the side eye when she's basically spilling her cleavage onto the table for a photograph.
One of the best stink eyes ever.
She was married and divorced three times. Paul Mansfield was her first husband, and that was her manager. Then Mickey Hargitay, who was a quote-unquote actor/bodybuilder. And then her last husband was Matt Clymer, who was a producer, director, and writer. And she had five children, including Jane Marie Mansfield and Mariska Hargitay. So she allegedly, in addition to that, was intimately involved with numerous men, including RFK and JFK, and also her attorney, Samuel S. Brody, as well as Church of Satan leader Anton LaVey. Allegedly. All of this is alleged. She had a perceived rivalry with Marilyn Monroe. Even when Mansfield's film roles were drying up, she was widely considered Monroe's primal rival. However, Mansfield considered Mamie Van Doren her professional nemesis. Together, Monroe, Mansfield, and Mamie were known as the three M's of Hollywood blondes.
There you go.
And so we can't talk about Jane Mansfield without talking about the end of her life. After two appearances on the evening of June 28th, 1967, Mansfield, Sam Brody, who was her attorney and companion, their driver, Ronnie Harrison, who was age 20, and three of her children, Miklos, Zoltan, and Mariska, left Biloxi, Mississippi after midnight in a 1966 Buick Electra 225. Their destination was New Orleans. At about 2:25 a.m., the Buick crashed at high speed into the rear of a tractor trailer that had slowed down for a mosquito fogger. The three adults in the front seat died instantly. The children asleep in the rear seat survived with minor injuries. Reports that Mansfield was decapitated are untrue, although she did suffer severe head trauma.
Yeah, the clarification there is that she was more or less scalped, not decapitated.
Yeah, so that urban legend started with the appearance in police photographs of the crashed car with its top sheared off and what resembled a blonde-haired head tangled in the car's smashed windshield. However, the blonde object was actually a wig. So after her death, the National Highway Transportation Safety Authority recommended requiring an underride guard or a strong metal bar of steel tubing on all tractor trailers. And in America, that underride guard is sometimes known as the Mansfield bar. Her death car was saved by a private collector in Florida, where it became a roadside attraction in the 70s.
That's tacky, but hey, it's Florida.
As of 2019, the car is owned by Scott Michaels and is housed and shown at his dearly departed Tours and Artifact Museum in LA across from the Hollywood Forever Cemetery.
Tacky.
And that is our bio breakdown of Jane Mansfield. Anything I missed?
No, I think you got it.
All right, so feel free to edit out whatever there, but I think
it's... I think it's going to make your double feature rather brief.
Yeah, my midnight double feature is going to be brief. So let's get into it. It's the midnight double feature. This is where we take turns naming two movies that are within our topic at hand, and we talk about why they would be a good pairing for a public exhibition like a double feature. And so you want to go ahead and give me yours first?
Yeah, I'll go first. My double feature hinges on the aforementioned quote-unquote actor, Mickey Hargitay. Mm-hmm. He was pretty terrible.
Yeah, he was bad.
My first pick is from 1960, The Loves of Hercules. This was a fantasy film, obviously, and Italian film, and... it has been redone and given the treatment by Mystery Science Theater 3000. However, I did watch the original presentation. And it's the story of Hercules and him falling in love with Jane Mansfield's character, Queen Deianira, and his battles with the Hydra and other unnamed menaces. But at the same time, she plays a double role as Queen Hippolyta's ruse. She transforms herself to look like Queen Deianira. So Mickey Hargitay would stay with her and she could turn him into one of her stone sculptures. No, not stone. I'm sorry. Trees. Basically, she was turning men into trees. And Jane Mansfield was quite okay in this, considering what the material was. Remarkably, she was a brunette in this film.
I read that in the States or maybe on TV, they titled it Hercules versus the Hydra.
Yes. You can find it under that title as well. I'm following that with 1963, and you mentioned this as well. Promises. This stars Jane Mansfield, Marie McDonald, Tommy Noonan, and of course, Mickey Hargitay. And this is kind of a fun movie. And this is, in fact, the first production code era movie with full nudity. And they replay the hell out of this one clip of her frolic, just rolling in bed.
Yeah. You know,
showing off her boobage. And anyway, it's a drunken spree on a cruise ship. It's one of those comedy of errors, comedy of misinformation type films. Jane Mansfield's husband in the film, Jeff Brooks, played by Tommy Noonan, they're trying to have a baby, and it's just not happening.
Hmm.
And so the doctor on board kind of gives him a placebo, and he's going to get her knocked up. And she ends up knocked up. However, he thinks it's because she was sleeping around with Mickey Hargitay's character. And it's just silly and stupid and dumb. But it's funny, and you know, it's okay. It is what it is.
All right, so mine is going to be a pair of quote-unquote documentaries. First, we've got The Wild, Wild World of Jane Mansfield, from 1968, and it has no rating on Rotten Tomatoes. It was directed by Charles W. Brown, Joel Holt, and Arthur Knight. And I don't know why there were three directors. My only idea is that because there were three different locales in the movie. So it's what they call a Mondo documentary, which is a subgenre of exploitation films. It's kind of a pseudo documentary, usually depicting sensational topics such as sex or foreign cultures, nudity, scenes and situations of that sort. So this one is chronicling the travels of actress Jane Mansfield through parts of Europe and the US. The film follows her through Paris and Rome, and then she comes to the United States. I believe she goes to New York. She goes to a all-nude club. She goes to a gay bar. She goes to the Cannes Film Festival. She goes to Treve Fountain, things like this. The film was released with an X rating due to its adult content and nudity. So here's the thing. The nudity in the movie is all of the situations that she finds herself in. There's a band that's an all-girl topless band. There's a nude club, like I mentioned. There's a gay club she goes to. And then they just take a clip of her from Promises and plug it in.
Yeah, that checks out with Jane Mansfield and her publicity machine.
Right. And so then I'm going to pair this with what I believe to be a more legitimate documentary, even though it is very speculative. It's called Mansfield 6667. And they do stylize the title with the three sixes in a different color from the seven to imply the devil. And it's from 2017. It's got a 79% on Rotten Tomatoes. It was directed by, once again, more than one director, Todd Hughes and P. David Ebersole. And it's an examination of the last 2 years of movie star Jane Mansfield's life, including an alleged affair with Anton LaVey, the head of the Church of Satan. Now, Sean, I watched this a couple years ago when it came out, but you watched it recently.
It was a pretty schlocky documentary. And of course, heck, Anton LaVey was pretty schlocky himself. As two people who like to manipulate the media for publicity purposes, I think it was a good pairing. But I don't think there was any substance to the rumor that they were quote unquote together.
Yeah, there's really no evidence.
Now, they did in the documentary really work hard to draw these parallels and comparisons to Jane Mansfield's untimely demise to somehow the fact that she was in the atmosphere of Anton LaVey and the Church of Satan, which, again, I just don't think any of that holds water whatsoever.
The devil did it. All right, so yeah, that's going to be my midnight double feature. Shall we move it into our feature segment?
Do it.
All right, this is going to be the recast, and this is where we take a film that is within the catalog of our subject at hand, this week being Jane Mansfield, and we hypothetically recast a few of the main roles with contemporary actors who are...
at the height of their powers!
Oh, that made my dogs bark.
That was great.
And so the first movie is going to be Will Success Spoil Rock Hunter from 1957. It's based on a musical play that Jane Mansfield also starred in. And it's got an 86% on Rotten Tomatoes. It was directed by Frank Tashlin, a.k.a. Tish Tash.
Why?
That was just his nickname, Tish Tash.
How unfortunate.
And he was an American animator, cartoonist, children's writer, illustrator, screenwriter, and film director of comedy movies, including The Girl Can't Help It, Hollywood or Bust with Jerry Lewis and Dean Martin, and also The Disorderly Orderly with Jerry Lewis. So the situation in this movie, Will Success Spoil Rock Hunter, is we've got this ad man, Rock Hunter, played by Tony Randall. And he writes television commercials and he's hatched a strategy for a new beauty product. I believe it's a lipstick, and he needs a famous face to endorse it and deliver his message. Rock tries to recruit actress Rita Marlowe, played by Jane Mansfield, and at first he thinks it's beneath her, but she wants to make her actor lover, played by Mickey Hargitay, envious. So she agrees, as long as Rock pretends to be her boyfriend. Soon, Rock is running the ad company, but his ascension is greeted by all kinds of personal troubles, including with his actual girlfriend, whose name is Jenny Wells. It's a silly movie.
Yeah, it's silly, but it's charming.
Yeah, I think it's kind of enjoyable in its own way. So the roles that we're going to recast, we've got Rita Marlowe, played by Jane Mansfield. We've got Rockwell P. Hunter, played by Tony Randall. We've got Jenny Wells, the girlfriend, played by Betsy Drake. And then we've got, and I know I should have probably included Mickey Hargitay, but he was really annoying. So instead, I'm going to say that we're recasting George Schmidlap, the only man who, or the man who discovered Rita Marlowe and her only true love, who was 67 at the time, played by Groucho Marx.
Yeah, I'm glad we're doing this. This is probably one of the few times we'll get to recast Groucho.
Very nice. So do you want to go first with your Rita Marlowe?
Yeah, sure. So Mansfield was 24. I'm aging this up just a smidge. I'm going with a 30-year-old actress who is known for her good looks because she's done quite a bit of modeling in addition to her acting. You may know her from some appearances on Angie Tribeca, A Rainy Day in New York, or Wilt. But I thought that she did a very good job playing another role inspired by another famous blonde bombshell in the film adaptation of Baywatch as CJ Parker. It's Kelly Rohrbach.
Oh, interesting. Okay, I'm glad you didn't steal mine because you probably know what I'm going to do. I aged it up even more. I've got an actress who's 34 now. She was also in Baywatch, the movie. That's what you're talking about too, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
She was also in Texas Chainsaw 3D. She's in a oddball comedy called When We First Met.
Yay!
And of course, she's in season one of True Detective. I'm talking about the modern bombshell, Alexandra Daddario.
Excellent.
Next up, we've got Rockwell P. Hunter, the ad man, who finds himself in a very sticky situation, originally played by Tony Randall, who I know the name Tony Randall is, sounds familiar, but I had to look him up. He was on the Odd Couple TV show.
Yep.
He was Felix Unger on there. He was also in a movie called Pillow Talk and The Seven Faces of Dr. Lau.
Yep.
And Tony Randall was 37 at the time.
I'm so glad that he popped up here because I always liked Tony Randall. When I was a kid, he was in a TV series called Oh, Sydney or something like that.
Okay.
And he's always struck me as being a very fastidious man. Questionable about his sexual preferences, but you know, that, again, the Odd Couple really was a good defining role for him. So this actor that I'm recasting seems like a supernatural fit for me. Again, aging up my cast, he's 49 years old. He was in Night at the Museum, I Love You Man, 17 Again, the television series The State. You might remember him in VHS. But most people know him from Reno 911 as Lieutenant Jim Dangle. I'm talking about Thomas Lennon.
That is awesome. I think that's great. I think that would be really good. He's also written a lot of stuff. Good, good pick. My Tony Randall, my Rockwell P. Hunter, is 36 now. Oh, Michelle's walking in the room. Say hello, Michelle.
Hi.
Drink.
My lovely wife, Michelle, is in the room, so we have to drink. So Rockwell P. Hunter is played by Tony Randall, who was 37 at the time. My actor's 36, and he is he's got a certain awkwardness, and but also a certain ambition. He was in a movie called Frank. He was in the Coen Brothers remake of True Grit. He's in a time-traveling rom-com called About Time. He's also in Ex Machina. His name is Donal Gleason.
And his name came up in the Department of Corrections department.
Indeed. And the next character is Rock's real-life girlfriend, who doesn't really care for all the publicity that Rock is getting with Rita. Okay, so she's trying to do a bunch of self-improvement stuff and really would rather things go back to the way they were before. She was played by Betsy Drake, who was 34 at the time. Some interesting things about her. She survived the sinking of the SS Andrea Doria.
Oh, cool.
She also was the third wife of Cary Grant.
Okay.
In his longest marriage. And she introduced Cary Grant to the then legal LSD.
Oh.
Yeah, and also meditation. So who's going to be your Jenny Wells?
This is kind of a face value pick, even though this actress, of course, is fantastic in her own right. I just kept seeing her from certain angles, and I was like, who is she reminding me of? And it finally hit me. Ironically, she was also in the film Frank. She's also in The Dark Knight, Crazy Heart, and Secretary. I'm talking about the great Maggie Gyllenhaal.
Nice. Man, that movie Frank is underrated. Next up, we've got my pick for Jenny Wells. And my actress is 32 now. She was in A Simple Favor, which I think we both liked. Also, yeah. The Age of Adeline, The Shallows, and of course, everybody knows her from Gossip Girl. I'm talking about the wife of the modern day Cary Grant, Blake Lively.
Yep, nice.
Finally, we've got Rita Marlowe's only true love, although she can't find him throughout the whole movie. He only shows up, spoiler alert, at the very end of the film. His name is George Schmidlap, and he's played by the 67-year-old Groucho Marx.
I love this recast. I went with a 74-year-old actor. You will know him from Waiting for Guffman, A Mighty Wind, Best in Show, American Pie, and Schitt's Creek. I'm talking about Eugene Levy.
Oh, that's good, dude.
Levy? Is it Levy or Levy?
I think it's Levy, but it's fine. He is Groucho Marx. I love it. Groucho Marx was playing this showman slash kind of an aging Bob Hope type character in this.
Yeah.
And my actor, even though in retrospect, I was just watching something the other night where Greg Kinnear plays Bob Hope.
I could see that.
It was called, and I should save this for movie marathon, but I don't think it's one of my check-ins. It was called Misbehavior, but spelled with a U. And it's about a group of women who disrupt the 1970 Miss World competition.
Okay.
Anyway, I digress. My actor is 68 now. He is in Lonesome Dove as Sheriff July Johnson. He's also in American Beauty. He's in the recent Little Women. He's also got a small part in A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. His name is Chris Cooper.
Oh, Chris.
He's going to have to jazz it up a little bit. But he's a fine actor, and I'm sure he can do whatever is required of him. All right, so I think that we need to do recommends or not recommends.
I recommend it. It's fun.
Yeah, I think it's a recommend, especially right now when you have fuck all time to watch whatever you want. Check out Will Success Spoil Rock Hunter? So with that, we're going to go ahead and go into intermission, but not before we say,
let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby.
And get ourselves some
Mounds bars.
I suggest 41 or 21 or 41.
All right, Chop Shoppers, thank you for bearing with us during intermission. This is your host, Travis. And I just have one question for you, Sean. what is one way we could make our podcast more prominent?
Oh, if our listeners would rate and review us on iTunes.
Rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes.
And pin your friends down and force them to do it.
Make them go ahead and do a review. We're very under review.
Like make it a whole pyramid scheme. Get the people under them to do it and multiply.
A podsy scheme.
Ooh, I like it.
Yes. You folks who are listening right now, it would be fantastic if while you're listening or right after, you don't have to stop the show. Don't stop the show. But if afterwards you could go to iTunes and give us a review or a rating, that would be awesome as well. Or on whatever podcatcher app it is that you're listening to us. We're on a few of them. And also, be aware of our online presence. We have a Facebook page. It's facebook.com/cinemachopshop. We're hosted natively online on Podbean. It's Cinema Chop Shop on Podbean. And our Twitter handle is @CinemaChopShop. We do a lot of stuff on there, like our movie marathon, where Sean consistently kicks my ass. Also, our email address is cinemachopshop@gmail.com. You can email us anytime. We check it frequently. The beers that we check in after intermission, you're about to find out about some, are always checked in on Untappd. That's UNTAPPD. And we are Cinema Chop Shop on there. Once again, thank you to you, the listeners. Thank you for tuning in. And enjoy the rest of the show.
And now, on with the show.
All right. Welcome back, Chop Shoppers. Thank you for bearing with us during intermission. We just had to go change out the filters on our masks. And when we come back from intermission, what do we like to do, Sean?
We like to do beer check-ins.
And what are you checking in today, sir?
I ventured out into the elements and put on my hazmat suit and my mask and went to our local beer shop. And I got a new beer from Savannah River Brewing Company out of Augusta, Georgia. And I love the name of this beer, Dungeons and Flagons.
What is flagons?
Flagon is like a big mug of mead kind of thing. So this is Dungeons and Flagons fantasy role-playing beer. Double India Pale Ale, 8.5%.
Right on. Speaking of Dungeons and Dragons, Michelle and I watched the first episode of The Witcher today.
Oh.
Have you seen it?
Is that the one with Cavill?
Yes.
I have not seen it.
I found myself not really being able to get into it, but I did mention that it was like made for D&D nerds.
Yeah, it's. I know a lot of people who love that video game, and I never got into either of them.
I didn't even know that was a video game. I do have a beer to check in. It's not a great beer, but it's a beer that I don't think that we've checked in on the show before. It's from Pottsville, Pennsylvania, and it's called Yuengling Light Lager.
Really? How is that?
You know what it tastes like? It tastes like carbonated unsweetened tea. But it's only got 99 calories. All right, so let's go ahead and get into our next segment, which is the 2020 movie marathon. And this is where Sean and I and whoever else out there would like to participate try to check in as many movies as we can throughout the calendar year. And this year's a leap year, right?
It is.
So that means we're going for 366 or beyond. And as of this recording, it is the 108th day of the year. What number are you on, sir?
Well, before I give mine, Chelsea, who is at home sick, wanted me to relay that she has crossed movie 100.
Oh, wow.
Yes. I guess in her illness, she's been putting away the movies. Anyway, I just checked in movie number 144.
Right on. Well, before I tell you mine, I want to say that we're wishing Chelsea get well soon. And Michelle said the same thing. I see you're 144 and I've got 154, sir.
Good on you.
154. Now, in these troubling times, some of them are blending together. But that's why I'm glad that we document them on Letterboxd and Twitter with the hashtag 2020 Movie Marathon.
I think we should get t-shirts made.
Yeah. Oh, the dog thinks so too.
I agree.
And so what's going to be your first check-in this week?
All right, I'm going to keep it on theme with the episode. And this is a an old Columbia film noir that's currently available on the Criterion Channel. It's called The Burglar. This is from 1957. It stars Dan Duryea, who we've had cross our paths twice now, if I remember correctly, and Jane Mansfield. And I'd sum this up as honor among thieves. Dan Duryea's family ties to his half-sister, played by Jane Mansfield, upends his final heist. This, in my opinion, is Jane Mansfield at her best. She is very un-bombshell, very un-Marilyn Monroe. Her voice is a much lower range, and you get to see, I think, a glimpse of the real person who Jane Mansfield really was. Great, great, great film noir. I think you should check it out.
Right on. My first check-in for this week is going to be number 145, and it's called Eat Brains Love from 2019. And it is a zom-com. You know how I like a zombie comedy.
Right on.
So this one is funny, but it's very graphic. A trigger warning to people out there. It's got a lot of tearing flesh and stuff like that. But it is featuring Jake Cannavale, who is Bobby Cannavale's son. So he's a newer actor. He did have a one-episode performance in The Mandalorian. So another interesting thing about the movie, the female lead, Angelique Riviera, was also in a made-for-TV movie recently called Drink Slay Love, which was about vampires.
Oh my God.
I have not seen that one, but I hope she's not getting typecast. What's your next one, Sean?
Okay, this one is so good, Drink. Criterion Channel last week did a live watch kind of thing, a watch party, I guess is what you'd call it. One of their hosts that routinely appears in a lot of their documentary type things, their behind the scenes features, was moderating their Twitter feed, and they watched Murder by Contract. This is from 1958. This movie is another film noir. This is ridiculously good. It's as if Quentin Tarantino and Wes Anderson collaborated on a likable hitman movie.
So you liked it?
I freaking love this movie. This movie is so stylish, so cool, and yet at the same time kind of quirky. It just, like, there's this little guitar riff, this jazz guitar riff that plays through the whole movie, and everything's so neat and tidy. I was like, Wes Anderson's got to see this film. I'm sure Tarantino's seen this film. They, as a matter of fact, went back and looked at the Criterion Twitter feed, and they were talking about, there's one particular scene where the lead character is, he's the hitman, and he's riding in the front seat with the two handlers of his in Los Angeles. And it looks just like the scene in Pulp Fiction where Travolta and Samuel L. Jackson and what's his face that was riding in the back seat?
Oh, the guy from Mad TV,
Phil Lamar. Thank you. And it's so eerily similar. They were like, yeah, this is obviously an influence for him. As a matter of fact, I think you would probably say there's a lot of Scorsese influence, it influenced Scorsese in some of his mafioso kind of films. I can't give this a higher recommendation. It's such a cool film.
Awesome. And so it's currently on Criterion Channel?
Yep. It's in the Columbia Noir section, Murder by Contract.
Awesome. My next check-in is going to be number 146. And this is one that was recommended to me by our good friend Marco.
Fuck that guy.
It's from 2020 and it is called Uncorked. It is... it's starring an actor who's fairly new, at least as far as I know. His name is Mamoudou Afi. I'm probably butchering that, but he's flexing some serious acting chops as the character Elijah, who is an aspiring sommelier who upsets his father through his lack of interest in the family barbecue business. And the father is a famous actor whose name escapes me right now. Really good movie. It is predominantly an African-American cast, but a very universal theme.
Yeah, I saw the trailer for this and it looks to be really good.
Yeah. Next up for you.
Okay, I'm going to check in one that you've seen and I've seen your rating and review. It's the film adaptation. It's a Blumhouse joint of Fantasy Island, based on the popular 1980s television show Fantasy Island.
Boo!
So I know you didn't like it. Go ahead and give me your piece on that.
Here's the thing. I never saw the original TV show. I've never seen an episode of it. I actually don't know anything about the premise of it.
Okay, that's fair. And you know, in my review, I said it's like the Baywatch movie. I don't understand why people are bent out of shape over it. You couldn't have possibly expected a masterpiece. It played out exactly as expected. It's an amped up TV movie, essentially. The show wasn't that great. There's a lot of nostalgia about the show, but if you go back and watch some of the episodes, they're pretty contrived and pretty silly. They tried to give it a more serious horror slant to it. It's about what I expected to watch. It's not great. It's not good, but it's, you know, it has a plot. It finishes.
I understand.
And they're obviously trying to tentpole it as a franchise.
Let me ask you this. Was the device of the fantasies being counteracted by a inverse curse part of the original TV show?
No, I don't think that ever really, they dug that deep into it. However, there was always a hint of mystery about the TV show. Like things, as they said, you know, sometimes the fantasies don't go as you expect. Sometimes you just have to let them play out. That is definitely part of the TV show.
It reminded me of that episode of Rick and Morty where the daughter works for the devil in that Needful Things shop.
Yeah, I mean, it's exactly that. It's the monkey's paw. Be careful what you wish for. It might come true.
Right on. I got one more. Be careful what you wish for, indeed. This is number 154, and it's called Butt Boy. Now, just a quick note. Be careful when you're Googling the title of this movie. This is an actual film from 2019, and it is an extremely dark comedy / mystery. Our main character, here's where it starts out. Our main character, Chip, is in a loveless marriage with a baby. He's with a loveless marriage with his wife, and they have a baby. And he has his very first prostate exam. The very next thing you know, all these things, objects, pets, people start going missing in his life. Spoiler alert right here. You fast forward like 9 years, maybe it's 5 or 6 years, and he's in Alcoholics Anonymous, even though he's not really a drinker. And he is picked to be the sponsor for a new member who turns out to be a police detective who is on the case of a missing child at his sponsor's workplace, Chip's workplace. And so he starts investigating Chip, and turns out his asshole is like a black hole that can absorb anything as long as he like thinks about it real hard and clicks his heels or whatever. I don't know. And so it was really weird. I watched it with my wife, so that made it extra awkward.
You didn't try putting anything up your butt, did you?
No, I mean, I thought you were supposed to.
Okay. I just did a quick Google, and I can confirm you are definitely on a watch list now after your search.
Nice. All right, let's move it into the second part of our feature segment, which is the recast continued.
Part 2.
The sequel.
Double G's.
I knew you were going to say that. And the second movie is going to be from 1956. It's called The Girl Can't Help It. And it's not to be confused with the Little Richard song, even though that song is featured in the movie. 75% on Rotten Tomatoes. Once again, directed by Tish Tash. It's a situation where hefty hoodlum Marty Fats Murdoch, played by Edmund O'Brien, employs a has-been agent, Tom Miller, played by Tom Ewell, to transform his girlfriend, Jerry Jordan, played by Jane Mansfield, into a singing star because he trusts Tom not to make a pass at her. However, the more time Tom spends with a stunning blonde, the more smitten he becomes. His troubles multiply when he realizes that Jerry can't sing a note and is not in love with Murdoch and just wants to settle down with a nice man like himself. What did you think?
I thought it was okay. It has the same flavor of Will Success Spoil Rock Hunter. It starts out the same way, breaking the fourth wall, addressing the audience.
Yep.
Those two elements are there. It's a lighthearted comedy. What more can you say?
Well, we can say that the roles that we're going to recast are Jerry Jordan, played by Jane Mansfield, Tom Miller, played by Tom Ewell, and he was in The 7-Year Itch with Marilyn Monroe, incidentally. Or
yes, that's not, right.
Not so incidentally. He was also in a movie called Adam's Rib, but he was not either of the two leads. Tom Miller as Tom Ewell. And then we've got Marty Fats Murdoch, played by Edmund O'Brien, who, even though he was in charge of, he was basically the made man, the mob guy, the gangster. He was younger in real life than Tom Ewell. He was only 41 at the time.
Yeah, he definitely read a lot older on camera.
Well, he's a big guy.
He wasn't that big. He was.
Well, his name was Fats.
I didn't find him fat.
All right, so I think that you're starting first, right, with your Jerry Jordan?
Yeah, sure. I can do that. So this is a themed pick round, by the way.
Very nice.
See if you can pick it out. Okay. My actress is going to turn 24 later this year, and you would know her from Ender's Game, Bumblebee, The Edge of 17, and True Grit, as well as the Pitch Perfect movies, Haley Steinfeld.
She's a great actress.
Yeah, I like her. I think she's really good. And she can do comedy. That was another criteria.
I just opened a second beer. This is a local beer. It's got a really cool label. It's called Pixels.
Oh, haven't heard of that. By the way, Dungeons and Flagons, I would consider it to be chaotic evil. This is a bad, bad beer. Way too malty.
My pick is 31 now, and I don't want to give it away. She's going to be in the now delayed No Time to Die.
Oh.
But she's also in an upcoming film called Blonde, which is a fictional account of the life of Marilyn Monroe.
Oh, interesting.
Based on a novel by Joyce Carol Oates. I've shopped her and chopped her multiple times. She's one of my favorite young bombshells. Her name is Ana de Armas.
Okay, coolness.
Ana de Armas. And you'll see her in my visuals as Marilyn Monroe, which, you know, the parallels. And next up, we've got Tom Miller, played by Tom Ewell. Nice writing on the name of the character. He was 47 at the time, and he is the has-been agent who has to transform this girlfriend into a singing star. Now, in my review of this, I mentioned that the 1984 film Rhinestone, which we have reviewed in our Dolly Parton episode, borrowed heavily from the plot of this. However, they're both kind of a My Fair Lady or Pygmalion story.
Okay, cool.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Who is your Tom Miller?
All right. So I went a little older, but it was based on face value. But I think that he could pull this off. He's 57 years old. Of course, back then, everybody looked 10 years older anyway. This actor, you'll know him from Vacancy, Broken Arrow, The Doors movie.
Uh-huh.
A very iconic role in the movie Pulp Fiction. You can see him on the TV series Interrogation on the CBS All Access. He's really quite good in this. It's Look at the Brain on Brett. It's Frank Whaley.
Look at the fucking big brain on Brett.
That is a juicy burger.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah, watch Interrogation. You'll see what I'm talking about.
Remind me who your Jerry Jordan was.
Haley Steinfeld.
Okay, Haley Steinfeld. All right, okay. My pick is also 47 now. He was on Xena Warrior Princess. He was...
Oh, God.
He is in the series The Boys. He was also Judge Dredd in Dredd with two Ds.
Yes.
He is Dr. Leonard Bones McCoy in the Star Trek reboots. His name is Carl Urban.
Oh, one of Ali's favorite actors.
Did you know he was on Xena Warrior Princess?
I did not know that. That is new to me.
Me too.
But he was a writer of Rohan in the Lord of the Rings movies.
True. All right. Next, we've got Marty Fats Murdoch, played by Edmund O'Brien, who was 41 at the time. Edmund O'Brien was also in The Barefoot Contessa with Humphrey Bogart. He was in The Wild Bunch, and he was in The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance. Who's your pick for Marty Fats Murdoch, Sean?
All right. My actor is 50 years old, and you will remember him from films such as Ant-Man and the Wasp, Motherless Brooklyn, The Irishman, as well as The Jesus Rolls.
Okay.
But the reason I picked him was for his part in the short-lived, much too short-lived HBO series Vinyl, Bobby Cannavale.
Bobby Cannavale. Okay, so Bobby Cannavale is in Vinyl. And just repeat your three picks for me.
Haley Steinfeld, Frank Whaley, Bobby Cannavale.
I'm stumped. Maybe some of our listeners are screaming at us right now, but I'm stumped. What's your theme?
Haley Steinfeld was in Pitch Perfect. Frank Whaley was in The Doors. Bobby Cannavale was in Vinyl.
Who did Frank Whaley play in The Doors?
He was Robbie Krieger.
Okay. All right.
It's all music industry movies.
Man. All right, so my pick for Marty Fats Murdoch is 51 now. I aged him up so that he could be more bossy to Carl Urban. So he's 51. He's 4 years his senior.
Okay.
He was in, and I'm gonna say them, and I want you to tell me when you start to get my theme. Puddle Cruiser, The Slammin' Salmon.
Oh, my.
Club Dread with 1D.
Uh-huh.
Super Troopers, Beer Fest.
Oh, my.
Really anything Broken Lizard. His name is Kevin Heffernan.
Oh, love Heffernan. So listeners, I keep a file because I print all of my actors out. I keep a filing cabinet of my past picks, and I actually came across him in my search. So, yeah, that's great.
Kevin Heffernan. So when you said you have a file, I thought you meant a computer file.
No, I have an old-fashioned metal filing cabinet that have printouts of each of these actors.
That is some old-school chop shop shit right there.
Yeah, it's a very Luddite kind of way of approaching it.
Everything old is new again.
Analog, baby.
All right, so what are your thoughts on recommend or not recommend with The Girl Can't Help It?
It's the same as Rock Hunter. It's the same kind of recommend. It's very light comedy. There's no reason not to watch it. And it's fine.
Recommended as maybe a double feature
Yeah, I mean, because it's funny, you know, both have featured Jane Mansfield. One has to do with the music industry. The other has to do with television advertising.
Will you acknowledge that his nickname was Tish Tash?
I have acknowledged it, and I still don't understand it.
Sometimes people called him Frank Tash, but more affectionately, he was known as Tish Tash. All right, so let's move it into the bonus segment.
Do it.
Which is going to be a battle royale, a fight to the death between the three M's of Hollywood blondes.
Maybe we should assign Marilyn Monroe section.
Which one? There's two Monroes.
No, there's not. That is Marilyn Monroe. That is Mamie Van Doren. And I don't see Jane Mansfield. She must have night off some.
Jane Mansfield versus Marilyn Monroe versus Mamie Van Doren.
Can I pick Marilyn Manson?
Whoa, dude. Why do you keep using different people than are actually in the thing?
I'm just fucking with you. I will pick Jane Mansfield in this one because
Jane Mansfield.
Yeah, Mamie Van Doren is out of all three of them. I think Mamie Van Doren was the bimbo of the three. She does not come off as a very intelligent person. Marilyn Monroe, not really crazy about her body of work, and I don't mean any puns in that. But Jane Mansfield, I have to admit, this week has been a learning experience for me, and I have a lot of respect for her and who she was and what she was all about. She's a smart cookie.
While I do agree with everything that you said, in particular about Jane Mansfield, I'm going to have to go on the contrary and pick Mamie Van Doren because she's still alive.
So we're throwing the height of their powers out the window.
No, she survived the actual battle royale between the three of them, the three M's.
And she lived to tell the tale.
She's on Twitter.
I'll have to check that out. That was one good thing about that Mansfield 66-67 documentary was Mamie Van Doren's pieces. I mean, she seems like a plastic surgery hound, but you could tell she gives zero fucks.
Yeah. All right. So let's wrap it up. We want to, once again, say get well soon to Chelsea. Hope we have her back soon. We want to thank you, Sean, my co-host and co-producer, the engineer. What's something you want to plug today?
Oh, boy. I'll keep on plugging the curbside pickup at Seminar Brewing. You guys that take advantage of that are helping us keep the lights on as we muddle through this madness.
All right. And I want to ask you, do you know what next week's episode is?
Next week's episode will be disco movies.
Disco movies in celebration of the 43rd anniversary of the grand opening of the legendary New York City disco Studio 54 on April 26th, 1977. We're talking disco movies.
There's some good ones out there.
So everyone is aware of the 1977 disco movie Saturday Night Fever.
Right.
Starring John Travolta and featuring the music of the Bee Gees. There is, however, a lesser known sequel from 1984 called Staying Alive, with Travolta reprising his role as dancer Tony Romero.
Right.
The question here is, Staying Alive was directed, co-written and co-produced by what actor? You can't look it up.
Hit me again with that.
The question is, Staying Alive was directed, co-written, and co-produced by what actor?
Oh, it's got to be Stallone, right?
Sylvester Stallone is correct.
Oh, I was thinking Frank Stallone. Shit.
Yeah, that's he's definitely directed some big budget pictures. it's one of the two movies that Stallone directed, but did not, that he wrote, but did not star in. And that's another trivia question for our listeners. What was the other movie that Sylvester Stallone wrote that he did not star in?
What was it?
I don't know. I'm going to ask them.
Oh, by the way, speaking of Stallone, again, the Brian Dennehy tie-in. He was the cop in First Blood.
Nice. All right, so we're going to plug the podcast itself. Please rate, review, and subscribe to us on whatever app, whatever podcatcher you're using to hear this. We are hosted on podbean.com. It's Cinema Chop Shop on there. And our Twitter handle is at Cinema Chop Shop. Our Facebook is Cinema Chop Shop, as well as our Gmail is cinemachopshop@gmail.com. And the beers we checked in today, we'll check those in under the Cinema Chop Shop handle on Untappd. That's UNTAPPD. And finally, farewell. Thank you to you, the listeners. Stay safe, stay home, and please remember to wash, chop, retrofit.
And do something with your brassieres.